them laugh, make them laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh? My dad said be an actor, my son, but be a comical one, they'll be sad.
Welcome, everybody, to episode... What episode are we on?
264.
264 of the Metabolus 2 podcast. And I'm welcoming to my home today...
I am David.
Mr. David. Guest
in Ben's house.
Exactly. We are recording this...
We're breaking the fourth wall. Breaking the laws of time and space that we're actually in the same room, in the same state, in the same time zone.
Recording a podcast. Yeah.
And we are going to discuss the most recent episode of Doctor Who, Lux.
Lux.
Starring Shudigatwa and Virata Sethu.
And David has literally...
Five minutes ago finished watching it.
So it stopped. So this is like a fresh, hot take.
Real hot take.
I saw it a few... a couple of days ago when it came out on Saturday, so it's less of a hot take for me. But what do you think, David? What do you think of Lux, the show?
I think it's one of the best ones since RTD has returned. I think it's safe to say you and I are both fans of the Land of Fiction and the Mind Robber.
Absolutely.
And, these types of stories, and this definitely had elements of the Mind Robber in it, where you, instead of land of the written word, we had the land of cartoons, cinema cartoons. So
right.
It also combined with Love and Monsters, too, of RTD's look on fandom. So it had a lot of elements, making fun of the general love of Blink. I like the...
That was a good bit, actually. I dig at Moff.
Yeah, I like that... Dig. I mean, yeah, you could definitely see RTD saying, you know, meeting fans, what's your favorite story? Blink. No, really, what is your Blink? And that's pretty consistent of, I think, fans who were of that age were first watching that story back when it came on in season three, series three.
And it is good that Belinda's reaction to that is, well, that sounds epic.
Very sarcastic voice.
Because that is the reaction that a non-fan, and she's not a fan of the show. Mm-hmm. She's not a fan of the Doctor. She's not a fan of being on the show. She wants to get back to her home planet, inverted commas. So that's a nice kind of meta reaction that she has.
And I like the way they handled fandom better than Greatest Show in the Galaxy. I like the way it handled fandom better than Love and Monsters. I thought this was kind of spot on and really abbreviated, too, where, okay, they met their best friends and, you know, they're there to watch the show and
they
don't really exist outside the show. I mean, it was kind of a meta commentary on fandom itself, and it was also nice to see at the end that they actually did exist and they were very happy to meet the Doctor. I'm going to have to look at a cast list to remember the characters' names. But
they had a great collection of VHS behind them.
I missed that detail.
Yeah. At least it looked like VHS to me. But, so that's a sign of a deep fan.
But Hassan was the one who had the
scarf,
the Tom Baker scarf,
right,
the unit logo. And then Lizzie had the Telos T-shirt. And I can't remember what... Robin had.
I did see a post from David Howe of Telos fame on Facebook. How delighted he was that his publishing company finally got
name checked.
We're actually on the show as being real and on the show, which isn't actually being real because it's just a show. So
was it a Telos publishing T-shirt?
It was one of his T-shirts.
Okay, well that was nice because RTD definitely knows fandom and fan publishers and stuff.
Definitely knows fandom,
So that
absolutely.
The one thing I found pretty distracting throughout is the character Tommy Lee, the name Tommy Lee.
Right.
He's the drummer for Motley Crue.
Oh,
It was hard for me not to think, well, this is the future drummer of Motley Crue. Of course, it wasn't. Tommy Lee was born in the 60s, not in the 40s. But that's where my mind went every time I heard Tommy Lee.
But as an American gentleman, how did you feel they did America? I think it was shot in real in mid Wales.
I thought it was good. I mean, it certainly tried to capture a 1950s vibe. I like that it acknowledges the segregation.
I thought that was good. I thought they did that well, actually. Yeah.
You know, I thought there was an open acknowledgement to it. They didn't let it bog down the story. It was handled, I think, a little more gracefully than, say, in the Shakespeare Code, where the tenant doctor just said to Martha, walk around like you own the place or you belong. Gatwick's doctor was very conscientious that this is 1952, there's segregation, they're not even supposed to be there. But then I think it also allowed not every white person was going to be a racist.
Right.
And that, you know, Tommy Lee's mom says, I'll talk to anyone.
Right.
And the younger, the soda jerk or whatever, the one working behind the counter wasn't going to, you know, it's 4 a.m. I'm not going to, you know, the rules are meant to be broken. So I thought it was a nice way of acknowledging it, nice way of not getting bogged down by it, but then not letting it derail the story and make it the story about that. And
yeah, it wasn't a racism story.
Right.
Yeah.
It was about the God of Light. And of the ones with the toy maker and the tricks, Jinx Monsoon character, Maestro. And
the Sutekh.
Yeah, the Sutekh is probably the weakest one.
Yeah, kinda.
That doesn't fit within this pantheon at all. But I mean, if you're going to have a guy, but see, you have a god of death, and it makes sense why RTD has it, because you have a god of death.
Right.
But I wouldn't have done the god of death from Egyptian mythology. There had to be something else from Doctor Who that you could have used.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that, you know, they've backtracked. He's not even from, Sutekh isn't even from Egyptian mythology at this
cultural
point.
Appropriation.
Because that's all cultural appropriation. No, I mean, yeah, I think that was a misfire on this pantheon, in my opinion. I mean, it's interesting that they're capitalizing pantheon, because we had the subtitles on.
So true.
I don't know whether pantheon is going to be like a place and a thing.
Star Trek?
Or whether they mean that pantheon, it's just a word meaning like a
collection
bunch of
gods. Yeah.
A pantheon, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think of the return of Alan Cumming? No, not King James, but Mr. Ringadam.
As everyone knows, I'm not a fan of Mr. Cumming, but he gave an excellent performance.
Mm-hmm.
He sounded just like a Fleischer cartoon.
He did, and very, like you said, very period. And
very period, yep.
Just the right amount of menace at all the various
points. No, he did an excellent job.
So,
And I think as much as I know about those kind of, you know, I guess maybe this was a little late for those Fleischer cartoons, early 1950s.
It was 52, just on the end, trailing in.
But I mean, they did a lot of fourth wall breaking. I mean, they were very meta in general.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it was obviously Disney aren't going to use. I mean, they could have used Steamboat Willie because he's out of copyright now.
Well, but it's also Disney. They could have given any.
They could have.
But they didn't want to have a
Donald Duck, an evil Donald Duck.
Yeah, they didn't want to have a Disney character be evil.
Yeah.
So, but the animation, I thought, for Mr. Ring-a-Ding and just every little bit of animation was pretty good. The 3D stuff, as it morphed, wasn't as good, but you know, it was only on the screen for seconds.
I thought it was interesting that Mr. Ring-a-Ding's hair, mm-hmm. which was a comb over to begin with.
That was my bing, sorry.
That's all right. Then became like evil, like antennae when he became three dimensions.
It was like worms.
Yeah, which, and the reason I mention this, because it reminded me of a underground comics character called, and I just had to look it up, called Coochie Cootie, which was a creation of the underground cartoonist Robert Williams in the late 1960s. I think it might have been deliberate, because the Coochie Coochie character was a deliberate riff on Fleischer cartoons,
mm-hmm.
But an evil Fleischer cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. There could be a subtle I mean, I'm interested. I think next, the new DWM that's coming out today in Britain has an in-depth analysis on how they developed that character. So I'm interested to read who designed Mr. Ring-a-Ding.
It did seem like it could slot in with late 40s, early 50s character design, the songs. I think it all kind of, the animation style all kind of fit, having watched a lot of Donald Duck type cartoons of their early 50s, late 40s.
Right.
So it almost was almost a 1930s style cartoon.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It fell earlier than the early 1950s, mm-hmm. you know.
But when the Doctor and Belinda got transformed, animated, that was very much a Scooby-Doo style.
Yeah, if only they'd done a Scooby-Doo run in front of like a moving Hanna-Barbera
that would have been
background.
Good.
That would have been a cheap. And also fun. So mm-hmm. I mean, it's a shame they didn't do that. Exactly. Yeah. Because they did the whole Scooby-Doo thing. I thought was very well done.
Yeah, I think they could have done a little more. That they were two-dimensional animated characters, and then Belinda discovers depth of character and becomes more.
Yeah, I was looking for more of a they look around and they're flat and mm-hmm. you know all that kind of like we're just cartoons kind of Roger Rabbit
right
style messing about with kind of cartoons are real or are they kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That I think that was a missed trick, I guess.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, it's only 45-50 minutes. Mm-hmm. You got to cut something for time, so you know,
yeah.
maybe that's in earlier drafts.
Yeah.
Again, you know, as I was saying last week, the short format is really feeling short to me.
In this particular one, yeah, it does seem like there's room for more depth.
Yeah, they could have done a lot more without spending a lot more money. And again, I think it's interesting because, again, I was saying last week, well, that's not really, these kind of short block entertainments are not really what we're into right now. We're mm-hmm. into kind of really kind of long form entertainment. And the other thing, of course, about something being streaming, and I think this is where maybe Doctor Who is a little bit constrained by also having to be on the television, is that a streaming episode can be as long as you want it to be.
Yes, that's true.
We noticed that recently when we were watching The Bear, that show about cooks, which is basically the episodes are all different lengths.
Yeah, this could have been easily, I think, give it 4 or 5 more minutes.
Yeah.
Expand a little bit out.
Yeah.
Play out the animation a little bit.
Yeah, because it's fun. I mean, who doesn't like things that are animated?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It has to be on the television at, 6 o'clock at night on the BBC.
Oh, that's
and
true.
And it has to then finish by any time for Match of the Day or whatever.
Yeah, so there, we are still constrained by BBC One scheduling.
Yeah.
This isn't really, truly a streaming show. It is.
It is.
The prime customer, the prime audience is in the UK watching on Saturday night.
Or is it, though? I mean, I think this is an interesting point in the show's history. Could it become a purely streaming show like, Black Mirror or The Bear, or I'm trying to think of other shows that I've seen that are just streaming shows? Is television holding Doctor Who back at this point? Debate. That's a heated debate.
No, I don't think it is. I think it's keeping it there, what's holding it back perhaps is the constraint that BBC wants a 45
exactly.
minute show.
Yes,
if they would have,
that's my point.
If they would have done a fifth, said, because back in the 70s, it wouldn't start exactly on the hour. You would start have like a 5:05 start time or a 5:25 start time or something like that. You didn't necessarily have to have it start exactly. It'd start when the afternoon match was over or anything like that.
And so, also, if it was too short, you could always do the recap. You can make that longer.
Mm-hmm.
If it was too long, I think then you got into problems with the classic era, and you get the kind of JNT. Well, we got to cut this in half, and then it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And then you have to wait till the DVD comes out, and they do, it's a special edition, and then you actually know what was going on in The Curse of Fenric.
What did you think of the restoration of Everyone But Mr. Pie at the end, where all the...
Did Mr. Pie die?
I think that was the...
Pie die?
Yeah, I think that was what indicated, implied
I
there, that
he
was going to...
Blow himself up because he's sad about his wife.
Yes, yeah. meet his wife in,
I'd do
in
that.
Death. Oh, well, there you go. I mean, it's sort of like, okay, this is, for me, you don't want to trivialize death, but you don't want to also make it. I mean, they RTD totally said it with the script that Ring-a-Ding said, well, if you can figure that out, you'll restore the 15 that I took.
Right.
But it's... The Pantheon, it was a little bit of a hand wave, I think.
The Pantheon always demand one sacrifice.
You always got to sacrifice one person.
That was spy. I like
Ibrahim.
Exactly. yeah, exactly. You know, the I am the servant.
Pyramids of Mars.
The servant of Sutek. He needs no other.
Yes.
I liked that there was a kind of a... And I thought... what do you think, preamble, what do you think of the direction? I thought it was a very well-directed episode.
It was very tightly directed with very,
very
interesting camera effects.
I'm going to look up the director right now because I don't know who that is. Lux.
Directed by Amanda Bracci, who... is an Australian director known for Picnic at Hanging Rock and Mr. Black.
She directed Picnic at Hanging Rock? I don't think so. That was Peter Weir.
Picnic at Hanging Rock.
She didn't direct that.
That's what she said. It's an Australian mystery and romance drama on a television series that appeared on Foxtel. Is that
So Picnic at Hanging Rock is a famous movie. Made in the 1970s.
Okay.
When she probably wasn't
born. Well, this
born.
Is 2018, probably a remake of it.
A remake. But, all right. Okay. Fun.
Kudos to her direction. I thought it was very...
I didn't even know they remade it. So
well, it's Australia. How much do we pay attention to
it'd be worth watching if it comes up anyway. Yeah, I thought it was great. The ending reminded me very much of another movie set in the past that ends up with an exploding cinema, movie theater. I'm going to ask you to guess which movie I'm talking about.
The only one that would come to mind is Cinema Paradiso, but I don't think it blew up in the end.
Sadly. I don't really like that film. No, the one I'm thinking of is Inglourious Bastards.
Oh, I haven't seen that, actually.
Yeah, which is a Tarantino movie, everyone, and ends up, spoiler alert, with a movie theater in Paris in 1944, I'm going to say, 43, exploding because of explosive cellular film.
Okay.
But what's interesting, again, to me, is that is, again, like a lot of the later Tarantino films, is very meta, and it is a movie about war movies rather than a war movie itself.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you know, Lux is a show that is about shows rather than being a show, sort of a little bit. So I like that.
Do you think...
Nice little callback by Amanda.
Do you think that this could have worked in any other year other than the early 50s, 1952? Could have worked in the 40s in the U.S.? I guess you probably...
It would have been black and white. When did they first have color cartoons?
Well, you had color cartoons
was quite
early.
Right? Yeah,
yeah, and then you have Wizard of Oz and all. Color is early in the States. Okay. I don't think it was color that was necessarily the...
Well, I mean, there was the involvement of the atom bomb.
Yeah.
Places it in the early 50s.
Yeah, so you wanted...
And newsreels place it in the early 50s. When did they stop having newsreels?
That must have been sometime in the 50s when...
No idea, yeah.
When TV probably became more prevalent in Americans' homes.
Yeah, and going to the movie theater and having a cartoon short.
So, put you on the spot. 1952, 16 Weeks of Mourning for Queen Elizabeth. Was that her father who...
That was her father who died,
so she had... That was her first year in the
gotta
as
be,
queen.
Yeah, got to be queen.
Okay.
So yeah,
that was my guess, but I didn't know for sure.
Yeah, the king is dead, long live the queen.
Okay.
Yeah, as soon as the elder monarch dies, their immediate offspring becomes queen immediately.
Yep.
With his last breath, she becomes queen. Yeah, how it works.
So,
yeah.
It's also kind of interesting that she's no queen no more. So
she is queen no more. Yeah.
So I wonder if 52...
Too soon to mention that for me, David.
But 52... Charles. Another Charles. Charles II.
Third.
Charles
the Third.
Charles II is Mel Gwynn
and the oranges and the wig and the syphilis and all that kind of stuff.
I do not follow monarchy.
You don't.
At
you're,
all.
You're not. You're not a fan of monarchy.
No,
you don't.
No,
you have all
I'm
the.
I'm of the no kings in America.
You know, I think we would avoid a lot of trouble if you just had like a normal king in America, like we have.
Okay.
The king who just keeps everyone in line doesn't allow any shenanigans to occur. Anyway,
So RTD returns to it seemed to me crucifixion imagery, Christ-like Ooh. Imagery at the end when Mr. Ring-a-Ding
sublimes into the universe.
He is, and he's being with the projection light and the regeneration energy coming out. It seemed to me that that was, again, RTD.
Very Rose Tyler at the end of Series 1.
Co-opting Christian imagery for the Doctor, much like in Voyage of the Damned.
Right.
With Tennant and the angels, and so
right.
did you see that? Or
yeah, I mean, it kind of turned Mr. Ring-a-Ding from a. I mean, I guess our TV watching Doctor Who fans who may or may not be real were correct. I wasn't quite sure of Mr. Ring-a-Ding's motives. Was Mr. Ring-a-Ding like the God of Light, or was he just like a harbinger of the God of Light?
Yeah,
or was he just an avatar of the God, and what is the God of Light, good or bad? It seems the God of Light's actually kind of good, because at the end you're like, well, I'm part of the universe.
Well, it's sort of like Jesus, if he was like, yeah, well, if he's the God of Light, why wasn't he already like that? So he must. They did harbinger on the marquee, so
why not?
So I don't know.
Yeah,
I got that.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it tied in with this story that
because there's nothing more than the gods that. The Kantian light than basically playing Wordle.
Well, this ties in with the whole story that he started with the Star Beast. So Star Beast says, wait till we find out the boss. So I think maybe maybe the boss is Mrs. Flood.
Yeah, we still got Mrs. Flood sticking her
Anita her Dobson
ghastly head in at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who is she going to turn out to be? What's the latest? What's the word on the street?
I heard that she's going to be one of the guardians.
Oh, I'm going to say the Dobson guardian. She can't really be the white.
The metal guardian. I don't know. I mean, it's going to...
Manchester guardian.
You don't think she's the white guardian?
I don't know. I don't know what she is, actually. Yeah. I mean, obviously she's going to be something... hopefully it's going to be good.
And yeah,
maybe she's the guardian of the show.
Yeah,
she's
maybe.
Always like breaking the walls.
Which
at
would
us.
Make sense if you
the
if
guardian
you,
of Doctor Who.
We have the those three fans again. Which
well, they're like the gods of Ragnarok.
They are kind of like the gods of Ragnarok,
but benevolent, kind
gods
and
of Ragnarok.
Also not obviously made of polystyrene painted gray.
They're real. They survived.
They're real, or are they?
Yeah, so there's a lot of things I think to like in this. And I think it's one
Absolutely.
Of the stronger ones of RTD's return. And this is the probably the things I don't like about it really tie into the arc. If this was kind of a stand, like name-checking Sutek again, it's sort of like, okay, that's picking at a scab. not happy about that. But even like if you did the idea of Sutek that you had, that this... At the end of The Wild Blue Yonder, where you see that corpse
right,
in
that's
space,
a Sutek.
If that would have been Sutek, that would have made more sense. That he's been riding since Tom and Liz hopped in the TARDIS back in 1975. It's too much of a leg pull.
Yeah.
But if Sutek had died in the vortex and this is his corpse and then coming back to the Wild Blue Yonder, that makes more sense. So.
Yeah, and if only RTD had taken that note of mine and rewritten
well,
the whole thing,
You're on Blue Sky. He can always drop you a line.
He could. Russell, if you're listening, remember we're both old Worcester men. So drop me a line and I can really help you out with some script notes.
Okay? There you go.
Cool. I mean, it's not a very strong arc. It's a weak arc.
Yeah, well, that's what he does.
Yeah.
He's not Moffat where everything kind of...
But the thing about Moffat's arcs is they don't ever pay off because he kind of forgets about them and doesn't...
He loses interest,
like can't work out how to finish it and just says like, it's done now.
So
you know, I mean, arcs are tricky. Arcs are difficult to do.
How interested are you in the Anita Dobson, Mrs. Flood arc?
Not very.
That's my idea, exactly. I really don't care.
Yeah, I'm going to develop this further. I would like it if she is So there's Guardians of Everything, mm-hmm. and she's the Guardian of Doctor Who, the TV show.
I like that idea.
Yeah?
Yeah, I like the idea, and I like especially because of the fourth wall breaking meeting fans
yep.
in this episode.
There's a great essay in one of... I'm only pointing upstairs because that's where they are. In one of the... surely our listener can see me pointing upstairs.
Yep.
In one of those Tatwood blah, blah, blah books, you know, the Man Norwegian.
Yep.
Which is... And I can't remember what volume it's in, and I still need to get the new two volumes they've done on the Baker... Baker
they
years.
Revised them?
It's now in two volumes. Okay. It's now like twice as much of nonsense. But there's a really good essay in one of those books about like who's watching the show,
mm-hmm.
which is like, well, who is actually sitting back and watching this? Are the Time Lords watching this on a on their you know time space visualizer?
Yeah.
Are the gods of Ragnarok watching this on their magic We Watch Everything screen?
Mm-hmm.
Which I've actually really it's really enjoyable thing to think about. Like, well, okay, this is a TV show. Who's actually watching the TV show?
Well, in RTD's case, it's
three 20-somethings. Three 20-somethings. One of which is wearing a scarf. The other's wearing a T-shirt and a fez. And the other one is snarking, is on the internet.
So it's also, you have a... Indian... They're British, right?
They seem to be British to me.
Okay, so two women...
Two women, one of which
women
is in a
presenting,
wheelchair.
One in a wheelchair. Two female presenting, one male presenting.
Right.
Male presenting is Indian.
Right.
Or Pakistani.
Right.
Subcontinent.
Yep.
Which is interesting that, you know, Belinda is, Virata Sethu was born in India. So that nice little parody there.
I loved her hair in this episode. She looked great.
Fantastic.
Very nice.
Both Shudi and Belinda.
They both shined out very well.
That's a good look for them. They were very stylish.
Yeah.
Y'all was very
suited. It's a good color for her. Yeah.
And she looked good. She looked good throughout. Both in her jammies, but in the animated and in
everything.
Good look for her.
Yep.
Anita Dobson looked good in her 50s garb.
She did, I think everyone looked excellent.
Do you think she's the guardian of astrophysics or British rock?
The guardian of that one asteroid that he discovered or whatever he did.
Oh, Brian May?
Yeah, Brian May.
Sir Brian May.
She's the guardian of Queen.
Guardian of Queen.
Yeah, the Queen guardian.
Guardian of Mercury, Eddie Murphy.
The guardian of Mercury, yeah.
Huh. I don't know. Probably
So, actually, unfortunately, that fourth wall thing was slightly spoiled for me because the woman in the wheelchair is a friend of Toby Haddock's.
Oh, really?
And he had her peering over his shoulder on a Facebook post.
It's not his partner, is it?
No. Okay. She's more in a wheelchair than that.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, when is that person going to turn up? Because I didn't watch it on Saturday. I watched it on Sunday because we had people over on Saturday.
You had social media.
I know.
Exactly. See, I came in cold, and so I knew nothing.
Yeah, I could see you chortling away on the sofa when
fourth
wall got broke.
I literally know nothing about this series. We didn't even do our traditional look at the trailer and
we
predict
didn't.
What's going on this
nope,
year because
no.
I had total
I was really
blackout.
Hoping they'd do some kind of... technology where they'd actually literally be able to leap out of the
that would have been
a projection
bridge too far.
Yeah, I'm not sure how they could do that, but yeah, I think as usual we start to write our own version of the show. I'd like to see those three come back, and I'd like Anita Dobson to be literally the guardian of Doctor Who, and they to be her harbingers of some kind. And the show to become so incredibly meta that it just rolls itself up like a...
puts itself into...
Like an Ouroboros. It eats its own tail until like... Boom, pops
puts
into,
it in a 20-year hiatus
nothing.
There.
Yep,
yep.
Pops into nothing.
Tea is getting cold.
Yep. Tea is getting cold. You've got to go and make some unlimited rice pudding somewhere. Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah. Positive reaction on this one.
Positive.
I think this is the... first one since Oxygen that I had, and I think I have a more positive reaction to this one than the one than Oxygen. So I think I really really like this one.
Yeah, it was good, and I think it's tough to make sure they're all good. But I mean, I think if they carry on with this kind of level of interest through this series, then that's good. It's a shame they weren't able to do that really in the last season, in my opinion.
I think it was a little I think RTD was a little bit hampered by GATWA's inavailability.
You think that was a thing?
Might have caused some rewrites and maybe some. This wasn't a Dr. Light story, but a lot of the first series of GATWA seemed a little Dr. Light, and I think if your show is Doctor Who,
he's got to be in it.
You got to have the Doctor.
So even the one where he's literally standing on a landmine. So I'm just quoting the show we just watched,
which was again another ding against that. The whole interaction with the fans, I thought, was just.
It was spot on. Chef kip.
And it also, for me, it was interesting that it wasn't a family sitting at tea time.
Oh, that is
interesting.
It wasn't
kids. These were young adults who grew up with Doctor Who, obviously watched Blink as kids.
Right.
Probably, let's see, Blink was 2007. Yeah, Blink was 2007, so that was, what, 18 years ago?
Yeah.
So if they watched around 5, they're mid-20s.
They're mid-20s, yeah.
They're 20, 23, 24,
I mean, you've just 25. Made a point that I think is interesting. I mean, I think everyone goes on about how, like, you know, well, certainly when it came back in 2005, the show was a family show that that families watched together. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's interesting that he made the choice for this not to be a family? That it wasn't like the royal family with, like, a mom and a dad and, like, a bolshy teenager and, like, two small kids?
It's a found family.
Okay, there's that. People have that nowadays.
That's true. You know, that they found each other. That's their their best friends.
And it's just as valid as I'm going to say normal family
or a traditional nuclear family.
I shouldn't say that.
Normal family. Is there any normal families anymore?
I'll take that back.
Okay, I can't edit that out
before I get canceled. No, edit it out.
I can just snip. Yeah, this is going to be lightly edited, which is unusual.
Which is good for you, because, like, you've often said the editing is the worst part.
Well, I am the worst one to self-edit. So, anyways, moving on. So it's interesting that it wasn't a traditional white English family with a mom, kid, one hiding behind the sofa.
Yeah, because if you can imagine this happening in Monty Python or something, and, like, you know, it's like a family.
Yeah.
It's like there's a dad and there's a mom. And
but I hate to say it, Monty Python is like almost
70 years ago. Yeah, that's ridiculous.
It's so our cultural or my cultural touchstones are very much 1970s.
But again, the other thing I was talking about, the famous sitcom, The Royal Family, which is like a 90s, which again is like 30 years ago now. So, but yeah. I think the choice to make it a found family of people who
would have
nothing else other than themselves and the show, maybe, or...
What I think, if you wanted to get really meta and really, you could have had Billy Piper as the mom her kid.
Oh yeah, her kid with the evil Lawrence Fox.
Watching it, and she, Billy playing the mom and kid and stuff. But it would be sort of like how in the 30th anniversary special of Doctor Who, where they had Liz Sladen and Sadie Miller, evading Daleks. You could have had something similar there, but that would have been that's little Tenet, Georgia Moffat level of
Have you seen the new DWM where they have a whole photo shoot of, like, Sadie in
Sarah Jane? I really should start getting the magazine. I let my digital subscription expire.
It's hard to get hold of, though. I get it from a place in Indiana, and they've kind of stopped carrying it.
I'm surprised you don't just have one delivered to your mom's house and collect it every 6 months or whenever you visit.
Yeah, but then I'd have 6 of them to read, and then I'd be behind.
Okay.
I like to keep up on it.
Yeah.
I mean, and the tariffs can't be helping, to be honest. No, we don't
no
talk...
No kings.
We don't talk about politics on this podcast. Because obviously David is a diehard Republican always voted for Donald Trump.
I'm cutting this part. I am not. All right. Well, you got anything more?
I have not.
The music wasn't too overwhelming.
No, I thought the music swelled a little bit in places, and I found it like, can you just de-swell it a bit? But I thought the kind of twiddly, you know, 1930s, 40s cartoon music was very well done. And I thought the swelling at the end when the Mr. Ring-a-ding sublimes into the universe was very well done. Mm-hmm. So, no, I mean, Murray Gold kept some of his worst instincts well under control.
Suppressed.
Yeah.
So well this done. Is interesting. This is another... Yep. I'm looking at the cast list. And
okay.
So the three Whoers,
yep.
Said they didn't have surnames. But looking at the cast list, character list, they all have surnames. So I wonder if that's how they survived, a meta type thing.
Right.
That, so we have Hasan Chowdhury, Lizzie Abel, and Robin Gossage. By the time credits, end credits roll, they have
surnames. Well, interesting enough, if you read, again, last month's now, GWM, in the writer's notes, mm-hmm. the RTD column at the beginning, he talks about having to give characters surnames. And how that's often something they do after they have basically written the story and started to record it, and then someone has to go away and do the credits. And apparently, when they're doing credits, they like to have full names rather than single names.
Really?
So that's obviously that magazine came out before this show aired. Mm-hmm. So obviously, he was maybe keying into that a little bit.
Maybe.
I don't know.
So credits. We have Belinda Chandra and the 15th Doctor.
Right.
A newsreader is a credit. Tommy Lee, husband, Reginald Pye. No, Reginald Pye, that's... Reginald is not a U.S. name. So Reggie Pye. That's just not...
Right.
That's not... And then you have Mr. Ring-a-Ding, Sunshine Sally, Logan Cheever, Renee Lowenstein, Helen Pye, policeman... Hasan Chowdhury, Lizzie Abel, Robin Gossage, and Mrs. Flood. So that reminds me of the policeman and the doctor noticing that it's New York PD.
NYPD, yeah.
And not taking it seriously. So Lux was harvesting imagery from films, I guess. But
Jimmy Cagney
I didn't understand how Tommy Lee's mom...
Well, how she was in the film as
how
well.
How was she in the film? That was a little... discontinuity there.
Yeah. It's obviously got to be clear that this is a successful episode. So I'm wondering whether, you know, there is going to be some payoff. Whether we are going to see more of this.
Maybe.
You know.
We have six more episodes?
Until May the 24th, yeah.
Series?
Yeah, oh. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Which again, I think is interesting, is that, as Mrs. Flood has said, that's...
limited run.
Limited run, it'll be end of the show. So I guess if it does get cancelled or put in a hiatus, they're already building in that into the narrative.
They should have had, instead of Mr. Ring-a-Ding, Mr. Grade.
Mr. Grader, Grader-Ding, Mr. Ding-a-Grade.
Ding-a-Grade, yeah.
Mr. Ding-a-Grade. Well.
All right.
There you go. It's one of the very few live instant reaction podcasts we've ever recorded. And a very appropriate for the meta...
Yeah, breaking the fourth wall, breaking podcast
whatever
walls
podcasts have, whatever prison
second wall I guess
we are in, we have broken out of it.
Well, thank you for listening to episode 264 of the Metabulous 2 podcast. I have been wondering what I would look like animated with Ben,
and I've been relaxing on my very own sofa with my friend David.
Until next time,
see you again soon, everyone.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Well,
there you go then.
It should be easy.
Okay, just stop it.
She mesmerizes with a smile. Dark eyes as compelling as the bourbon. The girl in the canary yellow. Smoke, but he takes one nonetheless. It helps to keep his motives true. Gold was blue. What else is the poor boy supposed to do? She dances. Words destroy.